I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you for being with me today. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And wherever you're listening from, thank you so much for joining us. Today's guest is Joanne Weiler. She is a local registered marriage and family therapist, and she's also the author of the new book, Break Up, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again. Actually, one of my teachers from broadcasting school had recommended you and said that I had to read this new book, and I've just received it today, so I'll have to read it after the show. But thank you so much for being with us, Joanne.
Oh, thank you, Marie. Yeah, Sabrina story, I think. So it's great to be here, too, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. And I love your what you just said at the beginning, your introduction. You know, it's just how can we share information to make the world better, you know? And so I'm aware that, you know, I'm at the university and there's lots of students here listening probably. And, you know, we've got a relationship with our school as well as in our significant relationships. And so one of the overriding premises that I've got in the initiative of writing the book is that when you're going through a breakup or when you've just gone through a breakup, you tend to feel kind of like a failure. And the same can be true kind of sometimes if you write an exam, right? And you just, you know, the exam doesn't go well and you just feel like a failure. And with every time you kind of take that story and you make that your life, what happens is there's kind of shrinkage, right, of yourself. Mm. And so how can I kind of start to embrace life and my relationships and the learning over time so that there's more of me, a less stressed version of me showing up in all parts of my life, whether it's in my personal relationship with my significant other or potential other, or whether it's my relationship with school and learning. So it's, you know, the sense that, you know, we're here to kind of learn how to have more capacity in our life and how to be in a more loving state. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the arc of the book, is so that we can get out of those stories that we can tell ourselves at time about failing and sort of go into a story of learning. And of course that happened. And here's me again, you know, repeating that pattern again. And how can I be different next time so I can get excited about moving forward mm-hmm. and doing it differently next time?
Yeah. Thank you. I just want to share also that I believe it's next Monday's show is going to be the Fund Drive episode when we will be raising funds for the radio station. And Surya Devi and Theta Phoenix, both musicians that I play on the show all the time, they're both coming, and we're going to have a girls sing-along music chat fest while we raise money for the station. And Joanne has generously donated two copies of her book, Break Up, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again, as well as a free session, which is $133 value. So definitely, if you're thinking about donating and you really resonate with today's interview, keep that in mind because you will have a chance to have access to that if you feel like you want to. That's our new computer system. It sometimes has a mind of its own. So. Anyway, so please do be sure to tune in next week because we're going to be giving those away as well. And thank you so much for the generous donation.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
And so, Joanne, I'm curious, when someone, so you're a marriage and family therapist. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I'm registered so that people can, I'm actually a registered clinical counselor as well. So I'm registered in these professional bodies so that people can use their extended benefits to come and see me. If you've got extended benefits, you can come to see me and it's covered by your insurance provider. And what it means is that, I'm helping people start to understand who they are over a lifetime. So the stories that we tell ourselves from watching our parents relate and things like, you know, birth order and whether you're an eldest, a youngest or middle child, that's all the kind of stuff that inputs the stories that become, that give us capacity to create and maintain attached long-term relationships. And so it takes, guess what, a few relationships to get to that place of discovery. And sometimes it can be painful along the way as you kind of try out different relationships. Yeah. So the idea is, you know, how can I step back and start to kind of think about all the inputs that I've had over my life and possibly even, you know, the inputs that my parents have had, because we tend to repeat, you know, the same kind of attachment patterns from our great grandparents even, and people that we haven't even met before that can play out even as early as in the womb. So all of that, as well as, you know, how can I have the capacity to talk through difficult conversations, you know, because sometimes we will have confusion and what I'm thinking is not what you're thinking. And I need to understand what you're thinking to meet in the middle and a kind of a bridge between us to be able to grow. So the thing that confuses you might be something that is actually a blind spot from your childhood that actually I have the opportunity to help provide healing if I can have the capacity to really hold that, the stress of whatever it is that I've done that's created that. And the same vice versa, because we all come in with learning, you know?
So when you say the stress of what I've done, you're talking about the stress in your relationships or as
yes.
a therapist?
Oh, in the relationship. Okay. So yeah, my job is actually to help you take a look and sort of, you know, this is what's happening. This is what has happened to me. And it feels like it's happened to me sort of rather than, okay, this is what I need to get because this is a pattern for me. And I want to look at changing that into the future. Because if I keep thinking about things are happening to me, I am never going to get better in my life. And I'm actually really going to have a repeating of the same kind of wounding over and over again. So it's really exciting when clients start to get like, oh, okay, I get it. That's me again. I did that. That was me showing up with those same vulnerabilities and possibly I'm playing out an unmet need from, you know, relationships past or even the first relationship with my mother or my father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have so many questions, and I always talk about my personal growth on the show. And one of the things is I guess we're only aware of what we're aware. Like I'm a pretty self-aware person, but then there's always, everyone has blind spots. Mm-hmm. I was watching a video by, I think, Bruce Lipton the other day, and he was talking about how something like 80% of the time we're in that sort of subconscious learned behavior mode and we're not conscious of our behavior, which is why we do these things and people will be like, oh, you're being so like this, and you're like, no, I'm not, but because we don't see it.
Marie, that's such a good point. And I just wanted to say that the only way you outgrow that is to engage in a relationship again and actually to dare to communicate the feelings that are getting hurt. And so, you know, some of the research around that is really interesting around studies for, there was a study that is kind of a landmark study where they had like a rat on an open space, but there was a pad that had an electric shock. You've probably heard of this before, right? And so the rat went to eat at this spot and the electrical shock came on. And then the rat backed off that space and wouldn't go back to that space until there was actually another rat that actually hadn't experienced the shock that would actually come to that feeding trough. Mm. And because the feeding trough was not electrified in any other, it only took that one time for that pattern to be created. And it takes another rat to actually outgrow that point of pain. So the same is true in our relationship. So we have this point of pain where we feel let down or abandoned at some point through confusion, possibly, or intention, you know, but that pain continues to be our story until we actually can communicate the pattern to someone who actually has the capacity to heal. So we heal each other in the relationships because we've all got those electric shocks that happen for us in all relationships because we're all intelligent people that have these different stories going on and they're projecting. And so the idea is actually, well, my book, Break Up, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again, it helps people actually start to kind of reference, okay, what's my part and what do I need to get better at communicating mm-hmm. and being vulnerable in actually saying that, gee, I don't have the answer. I don't know why, but my feelings are really hurt right now. I just feel so let down. It's so wounding to me. And that's really hard to do for men and women, especially the more protected you are, the more difficult it can be to actually come to that electric pad. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Well, and what I find is that when you're in that trigger, if something triggers you and you're in a high emotional state, you're not really able to communicate that effectively. You go into that subconscious behavioral mode where, like, this happened a few weeks ago with a guy that I was dating, and there were we had had some agreements for the evening and he had been drinking and he wasn't following through on them and we were around other people. And so I kind of let it go one time because I didn't want to make a scene. And then I sort of gave him I gave him an alternative and I wasn't communicating like, hey, this is a problem. We need to talk right now, because I was trying to be nice. And then as it built up and he did more and more things and drank more and more, I walked out. It was a huge scene. And by that point, I was so highly escalated that I couldn't communicate, like, I just need you to take the time to stop yelling at me or whatever, right? And we were both triggered because he was defensive because he didn't know what he had done to upset me so much. And I was upset because I'd been in my way trying to communicate this all evening and he wasn't mm-hmm. picking it up. And so it just ended up in this big thing and now we're broken up.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. No, that's not untypical, Marie. And so at that point of, it sounds like when he started drinking past a certain point, then he started to feel unsafe for you. Is that kind of accurate? Or what happened that made you kind of withdraw at the beginning and then sort of turn up the volume on getting his attention?
We had an agreement about how, you know, that he was going to make sure that I would get home because I went out in the cold for his thing and that wasn't working out. And I was like, well, then how about you come home with me tonight? And that was my way of giving him an alternative way of getting me home. And he was like, oh, I have plans tomorrow. And he didn't realize. And I wasn't able to say, look, I'm upset. And the only thing that's going to solve it is if you come back with me. And so he didn't get that. And then he was drinking and there were people and he wasn't, I didn't feel unsafe, but I just felt more and more frustrated. And then there was this girl there and then she was being inappropriate and he wasn't realizing he wasn't having good boundaries with her.
So when he drinks, it sounds like his boundaries go down. And then when you ask yourself, what do I need? If you asked yourself in that moment, going back in time, yeah. What would you tell yourself? What do you need? Because here he is. I can just kind of picture the scene. There's all these other girls. They're kind of flirty with him. And you are his girlfriend. And what did you need from him?
I just needed, I don't know.
To feel special.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
that,
to matter, to feel, right?
That's actually what I said. I said, you put her before me. And that really hurt.
If then that's the story that you told yourself in that moment, right? And when you do tell yourself that, it makes you withdraw. And so the fight or flight kind of response comes up because you don't feel attached mm-hmm. to him. You don't feel that he is a true partner in that moment. And this other girl has got his attention. So there's a scarcity, you know, you can see in that moment. Mm-hmm. So in that is kind of a pattern that happens for lots of people. And in that moment, we have a choice to kind of go to fight or flight, like turn up the volume and like prove our case. You're being a bad boyfriend in that moment, or actually say what you need, which allows him to really hear you. Because when you stop pointing the finger at what his behaviors are and you start expressing your own needs, mm-hmm. everything changes. So what you might say in hindsight, or maybe the next time around, is to say, you know, when you drink, I just notice you get a little extra flirty, and then I feel a bit insecure, and I just need those, that, you know, affirming kind of connection from you. And it can be to just hold my hand, or just let me know that I'm the most special girl in the room. And if I'm not, let's talk about that, because maybe it's the wrong relationship, or maybe I'm putting too much pressure on you around the relationship, because he will have his own story going. Possibly he experienced you as being controlling in that moment. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, because he's not
he
here.
Didn't,
right?
No, he was confused. And he wasn't flirting. It's a really long, convoluted thing. And this other woman was being inappropriate. And he's just wasn't cluing in to what was happening. And yeah.
And the hard thing is, you know, in an alcoholic kind of environment, sometimes, you know, the worst versions of ourselves, we get kind of reckless almost mm-hmm. with ourselves, right? And it's sort of, and in a way, it allows also the screen to come down. So possibly this has been a pattern that you've noticed in the relationship over time. And you know, it's just one moment that represents a lot of moments mm-hmm. kind of like that. Yeah. And so part of it, like as you move forward, is to say, okay, look at all your relationships, starting with the first man in your life, which would be your father, and draw a timeline of all the relationships you've had, and look at what you're learning about yourself, and what are the stories that those men in your life have told you about your value, and mm-hmm. and how safe you are in the relationship to really matter. And is there something about you developing more of a true sense of loving yourself? So part of the book is really my book, Break Up, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again, by the way, available on Amazon and 32 books in Edgemont Village, and also Barnes & Noble online. Anyways, is to kind of be able to create a space of, okay, I am tired of having my heart broken over and over again, and how can I be more present to learn about myself? So it may be actually taking some time out of dating and sitting back and starting to date yourself, like truly start to really kind of think about, like, what are my interests? What do I really love to do? When is the last time I really felt joyful? Mm-hmm. And because you need to kind of get that part really together first before you're actually ready to be sharing a life that you can actually have the capacity to really be able to express yourself, but also understand what's possibly true for the other person. So we need to be reciprocal and really having the capacity to really understand what's going on for the other person that's causing these behaviors at that moment. Mm-hmm. Until we can do that, we're not quite ready, right? And otherwise, we just kind of keep wounding ourselves in the same relationship over and over again. And it can feel like, well, you know, like there will never be a man for you. But of course, there's going to be a man for you. But first, there's got to be a Marie for you. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of part of it. And I think, it just takes time. But when you do take the time, then you actually choose kind of the right partner for you that is also self-aware and has also got that capacity to kind of think, how am I loving Marie in her language so that she really does feel special with me? Even if I'm talking to another woman, she knows that, you know, she is the one that I am with, and I'm fully with her, even if I'm not, you know, looking at her or standing right beside her. She's going to know that because I know the behaviors that let her know that. And I have the capacity to want to love her because I feel well enough within myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my next question was going to be, how important is it to find someone who is sort of on that same wavelength and willing to do the work? Because I find a lot of times that we always do our best, mm-hmm. but you have to have a certain capacity for self-awareness. You have to have a certain capacity to be open to like the love language. Well, if this is how I show my love, then you're just going to have to, like, some people have that attitude of, well, then you're just going to have to feel loved that way, even if that's not the thing that makes you feel loved.
That's such a good point, Maria. And it's that capacity to be able to think, like, how does my partner experience love? Because love shows up actually when it's hard. Like, you actually have loving behaviors when you're in the other person's need. So that is actually love. Love is not like just saying, I love you. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of like salutations, I love you, you know? But love is actually that other focused behavior where we're really thinking about what that other person's life is going like. How am I stepping into their shoes? You know, what is it like for them to be in relationship with me? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the goodness that you feel in providing love, you know, sort of gives you that brain state, you know, and it really is a chemistry state that you are feeding yourself with all of that good chemistry, that it's not just about infatuation, it's about a deep resonance that you know that you have a life partner, that you've got somebody that wants to ride the ups and the downs with you and really is thinking about your best interests as well as you're thinking about theirs. Mm-hmm. And that just, guess what, takes some practice. I mean, it takes a few partners to get there, but when you go through a loss of a relationship, you go into a grief process, right? Much like a death. And people either bounce into another relationship right away, not learning in that curve, or they actually go into like hiding because there's sort of this sense of retreat in failure. So you know, the book actually talks a little bit about brain state too, and the learning that we know through brain research. And men and women, you know, process information differently. We know now based on the male and female brain. And mm-hmm. so that has an impact for how we experience relationships. So for a man, when there's a breakup, oftentimes you think about a man being one thing at a time. Well, it's quite flooding, right? So either a man will be completely numb and just absolutely flooded in the experience of the loss, and just, you know, completely frozen, can't cope. Or, you know, oftentimes he will delay, he'll bounce into a new relationship, delay the grief process, and it kind of plays out in projections kind of thing into the next relationship. Mm-hmm. So you end up, you know, having more and more confusion. Or for a woman, typically she's got typically talking about it a bit more, like you are today, with an ease, you know, talking about your experience and integrating learning, because every time you talk with your friends about what's gone on for you, mm-hmm. Then you actually have, you integrate learning. But, and the other thing too is that oftentimes couples go into like a blame state where they're just like blaming and shaming the other person and displacing the learning and then just repeating the same pattern over and over again and, you know, again, wounding themselves and wounding others. So, yuck, you know, and that impacts your everything in your life, your ability to learn at school, your ability to, contribute at your work. Everything is built on the foundation of this partnership that you can actually plug in and should resource you.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it is time for a break. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking right now with Joanne Weiler. She is a clinical counselor and a registered marriage and family therapist in West Vancouver. And she is also author of Breakup, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again, which is available at Barnes & Noble, online, Amazon, and there's a store in...
There's a store in Edgemont Village, 32 Books, that has got it, as well as there's a vitamin store in Dunderave that's got it as well. The Vitamin House in Dunderave has got the book.
Nice.
And the book has just been published, so it's actually will be hopefully available at other, like Indigo and things like that too. But people can order it online to a Kindle version or, an ebook if they want through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or order the book itself. You can get it within a week.
Wonderful. So, yeah. I'm just going to put out the number, too. If you have a question for Joanne, 604-822-2487. You got to give us a call during the break so I can get you queued up. That's 604-822-2487. And also, next week on the funding drive, we'll have a couple of copies of the book as well as a complimentary session. She's donated two of those, so one for each person. So thank you so much again for that, Joanne.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
Hey there, listeners. It's almost that time of the year again where we ask you to help power the station you love. CITR's Fun Drive is kicking off on February 27th and ending with a finale party at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 7th. Last year, we exceeded our goal of $35,000 and used that money to purchase new soundboards for all three studios. This year, CITR needs your help in raising another $35,000 so that we can move into our brand new radio station this fall. You can donate by calling into your favorite show or go online to www.citr.ca. Again, Fun Drive is February 27th to March 7th, so be sure to donate and support campus and community radio. Afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Winter weather got you down? Let the February issue of Discorder be the light in your life. Bringing you the same exclusive content in our exciting new format, this month's issue is filled with oodles of goodies, such as shots from the DIY Fest Xenopalooza, the Groundhog Day staff sound-off, a calendar of all the best shows this month, and information on all the awesome swag you can win during this year's Fun Drive.
Are those CITR socks? That's bananas.
Plus band features on Hollow Moon, Connecticut, Redrick Salton, The Written Years, Vague, and Kubla Khan. All this and so much more in Discorder, that magazine from CITR. A copy can be picked up at any Friends of CITR business, or if you've gone paperless, check us out online at discorder.ca. And a very special thanks to our advertisers, the Biltmore Cabaret, Fortune Sound Club, LiveVan.com, MRG Concerts, the Portside Pub, Postal Loop, the Rickshaw Theater, Study and Go Abroad Fairs, and Weird Distro.
For a taste of the classics with a twist, join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
Hello and welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. We're speaking right now with Joanne Weiler. She is a clinical counselor as well as a registered marriage and family therapist. She's got all of the diplomas and everything, and you can use your extended insurance. But if you listen next week to the funding drive and you donate, then you may have a chance to get a copy of the book as well as a session with her. And you also do phone sessions.
Yeah. I can actually see people. Sometimes it's hard to come over to my clinic in West Vancouver. And so I often see, people over the phone. Actually, I don't see them over the phone, I guess. I actually talk to them over the phone. And that works out really well as well. It just sometimes it's a little bit easier with life pressures and demands. It's sometimes, easy to kind of be able to do that over the phone. Generally, though, it's always better in person. Mm-hmm. But it actually works quite nicely over the phone, too.
Cool.
Yeah.
My therapist usually only does phone sessions once in a while, but she wants to make sure she sees me. But do you ever see people in, like, California or anything, like do Skype or anything?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah. And more and more I'm doing that just because, and people travel. So some of my clients sometimes have, they've been traveling with their work and they might end up in like Paris, and they, you know, and they want to continue the work. So I will see them via Skype and do Skype sessions. And it does really work really well, too. There's something like, though, in person, right? I mean, there's micro expressions that we have, and then you really just being in connection with others, right? I mean, it's kind of the premise of relationship, right, is mm-hmm. actually being in a space that feels a sense of, you know, as Carl Rogers used to say, positive unconditional regard. But so just that sense of hearing your story and hearing your story with somebody else and having that sense of it, you know, being honored and a sense of empathy around it and also a sense of learning around it. Mm. So, you know, for instance, you were talking about being at this, you know, social setting and not feeling special. And so, you know, if I was working with you, I would suggest that you would kind of start to kind of look at yourself over time. And is this a story that you've, you know, experienced earlier and how is that kind of a repeating story? So what would a person who was special do in a moment in that time, in that moment? So if you knew that you really were number one in that moment, what would you do from that space? So it would be that question of like, what would love say now? Right. So how could I actually, you know, be that loving person that I am, but also get my boyfriend's attention in the moment to say, this is what I'm feeling. And I know you're not wanting me to feel this way, but this is how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. Right. So, so that's part of it is I think that when you are asking those questions, you're actually asking, why am I feeling this way? And more than accusing, like saying, you know, you're being a bad boyfriend, right? It's sort of like, you know, why do I feel this way right now? I feel like there's, you know, all these other groovy women in this moment that are really have got more sparkle than I do and more connection with you.
But see, that wasn't the case. Like, he's good in that way.
Yeah.
It's funny because a lot of the time he doesn't even notice other women when he's with me. It was just this other, like we talked during the break about, that was sort of his issue going along. But I don't want to talk too much about him.
Okay, so let's get on to something else.
But you had mentioned before the break brain state, and you do some EMDR. I saw that on your website. And I'm curious because I'm looking at, I've done EMDR a few sessions of it, and I didn't really notice any difference for me. And I'm looking into EFT, and I'm just wondering if you ever do any work with that or if you happen to know maybe what the difference is.
Yeah. So, okay. EMDR is an acronym for eye movement desensitization. That's why they abbreviated it. And reprocessing. And so with that, you know, and I am trained level one and two with that, and it works really well from like the sense of restoring trauma. So, and for working with couples, for instance, you can actually, you know, do an EMDR in the experience and actually blending which emotionally focused therapy is. So EFT, the acronym is emotionally focused therapy, which is how do we actually experience
the tapping EFT.
Oh, no. Okay. That's thought field therapy. That's we're getting all these acronyms here. Oh, phone. There's a phone call.
Yeah. Well, they didn't call during the break, so I don't know.
Should we take it?
CITR, hello. Good. Are you calling to ask a question? Yeah, I'm on the air doing an interview. I'm going to hang up if you're not calling for a question. Okay. Okay.
So,
Sorry, I'm actually interviewing someone. I got to go. Okay, bye.
That's
why I said call during. See, I won't answer. From now on, no more answering unless it's during the break. I apologize to the guy who called and I wouldn't talk to him.
And you know what? It's but isn't that, you know, what happens? Like life happens and there's that phone call that interrupts our intention, right? And how can we be at ease with that and flexible with that? And so I just wanted to answer, just sort of clarify, like, so with EMDR, it's actually helping you with trauma work. So things that have been traumatic in the past, then it actually can be quite effective. And a gal by the name of Shapiro came up with that. This is not in the book, actually, but just out of interest. So what it does is that helps you reprocess the information that you've taken away from the trauma. So it's kind of like if there was a car accident, if we're just focused all on the blood and the guts, we're constantly re-traumatizing ourselves. So in a relationship, we're constantly looking at our victimization in the relationship. You're constantly re-traumatizing yourself. So with EMDR, what you're doing is you're shifting what you're paying attention to and restoring, you know, the takeaway from that experience. Mm. So a gal by the name of Shapiro discovered that walking along a street, that when she tracked the lines in the pavement, she actually improved her mood. And sure enough, research has shown that by the tracking, so EMDR is having you track like either through a light system or with her two fingers moving across your eyesight or with the clicking of her hands or something in your ears, that you're actually reprocessing the emotional experience back in the actual trauma or the confusion of the past. Mm. And then emotionally focused therapy is actually focusing on the attachment wounds that have happened in your life. So if you've had a loss or confusion when you're younger, it creates a sense like in the critical stages of life between age 6 and 8, we should have the experience from our parents that we are center in their life, that our needs will be unconditionally met, that, you know, even though there's the learning curve and there's the structures of parenting, we basically know that we are loved and secure with our parents, that we know without a doubt that they will be there for us.
How many people actually get that, though?
Well, to some degree, I mean, there's just like a phone call coming in all of a sudden, right? We have to be able to cope with that, knowing that still that we matter. And so what happens is that in childhood, sometimes there could be a parent that has got a sickness and makes them unavailable to the parenting role. So it's not intentional. Of course, the parent loves their child, but is not available or doesn't have the capacity because they are coping to survive. Mm-hmm. It could be that the family has gone through a morphing of like divorce, and that has created a lack of capacity. So for those reasons, and lots
postpartum
of other ones.
Depression too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A person has a baby and has got, you know, postpartum depression. And in the early stages, there's not that care because they are not in a brain state to be able to have capacity. So those confusing messages can stay to create an insecure sense of the world. And so the person plays out then this pattern of my needs are not going to get met. So basically working from fear and anxiety. Mm. And you saw me point to my heart, right? It's like really like anchoring in that you can create that secure sense of yourself so that even when your boyfriend or someone that you're working with is giving you information that you don't matter, you know deeply that you do, but it's just kind of like me saying to you, Marie, you've got green spots on your face. And you'd say to me like, Joanne, are you crazy? Do you see green spots in other places? Like you would ask me 1,000 questions, but you would not have the assumption that you have green spots because you know without a doubt, Marie does not have green spots on her face. Believe me, if you're listening right now, she does not. Beautiful face facing me right now. So part of it is though, so emotionally focused therapy is actually helping increase a sense of safety in the attachment. So works really well in couples treatment. It also works in individual treatment. So how we can kind of build more capacity is by knowing that we have that security and basically going back to restore those confusing points in childhood as you gain more understanding and more resonance in your own heart. Mm. And yeah, so that does that answer your question?
I'm looking at the EFT I was talking about is the emotional freedom technique, the tapping. We have so many. When people say they have abandonment issues, that's generally where they stem from is that early period of attachment, right?
Well, and Marie, you brought up a really good point. So there is a tool that's really effective. What we know is that through a hug and through sex and through a physical connection, we release a hormone called oxytocin. Oxytocin is the attachment hormone, and it gives us an increase of feeling wellness and connection and safety. It's the one that, that's in the book, actually, about bringing your anxiety down and so that your capacity goes up. So what we know now through the research is that it is produced through contact in your skin. So it's interesting that, thought field therapy and this tapping modality that you're talking about, really we found is that it decreases anxiety. So it increases the production of oxytocin, the attachment hormone. And so it sounds like you've had some experience with that. And so what it is that, these different meridians of your body, that there's tapping in these seven points in your body, and that you actually are, sort of like a mantra kind of thing, repeating what you do want is your positive belief and sort of outstorying the negative belief. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's kind of working at your cognitions. If you've got a negative belief that is running your life, that I'm not lovable, you'd want to believe the positive opposite: I am lovable. And so with the story of I am lovable, then you're going to have more ease basically in your life.
So why is it that it's more, that it's easier for someone to believe that they're, if this is the belief that they have, to continue to believe that they're not lovable? Even though they're telling themselves I'm lovable, or I'm abundant, whatever the affirmation is. So many times in your mind, you're thinking, no, it's not true. I don't believe it. Or it's a little bit true. I wish it were true, but I can't get there. So what's happening there?
Yeah, it's when you're in a fear state, that you're kind of like, or in a war zone, right? You're kind of just looking to protect yourself and survive. So that is the fight or flight response, right? So you're actually looking for danger, 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 And so you don't want to be approaching a relationship with a sense of danger, danger, because what you look for is what is going to show up. If I'm really focused on negative information in my day, that's what I'm going to see, because you are looking for that information. That another really interesting research project was, that was done was a group of students in an auditorium, and they were asked to watch a basketball game and keep track of the number of times shots on goal, were made. And everybody in the room, had a little computer in front of them, and they tallied up all of the shots on goal, and they all were pretty accurate in their tallies after watching a 10-minute clip. And then the researcher backed up the reel and had them look at again that same reel that they had paid attention to for 10 minutes. And what they noticed when they backed it up was that there was this guy in a hairy gorilla suit off to the right-hand side of the screen that was actually coming in to taunt the players, and hilariously funny. So when he had them back, when he backed up the reel and he had them look at the same clip, the same 10 minutes again, and had them pay attention to the right-hand side of the screen, all of a sudden, everybody in the room started laughing, but not one person had noticed that hairy gorilla the first time.
Wow.
So if you have a script that life is scary and relationships are scary, you are going to keep collecting scary information. And over again, that what you really don't want becomes your reality in life. Mm-hmm. So so there's sort of a science behind, that really popular, almost cult book that came out, what was it called? Where you can actually envision
The Secret.
Secret, yeah. So, I mean, there is a science in that in some ways. What you pay attention to is going to show up over and over again. And there's a little bit more to it than just that book, but it actually was great in some ways because it got you kind of thinking about, could I want to pay attention to the positive information? So in relationship with a partner, you want to kind of really notice there's been things that have been upsetting, but what's working, and really make sure I'm balancing that I'm really noticing that, because it will build positivity in the relationship and your experience will grow from that place. And even for yourself, as you're kind of going through a process of of healing, you would say to yourself, but what do I really love about myself? What do I do well? Like, you know, it's kind of that, what are my strengths? Mm-hmm. So operating from a place of my strengths in life. And because if you're focused on the negative things in your environment, you're also focusing on the negative things in yourself. So that insecurity makes you kind of build more insecurity rather than actually, if I can really look at what are my strengths and bring that to the table. Because if I'm focused on my strengths, guess what? I'm going to have more ease and less fight or flight. So more capacity. Right. So to do that, I love Dan Siegel's work and many others who have created more awareness around meditation and being mindful and taking time in, right, to really practice brain training in a way. Mm-hmm. So I've tried to kind of bring in a collective of a lot of books that are out there right now in my book, Break Up, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again. So it's kind of one stop. It's got it all in it. And you can actually move yourself through a steady stream of getting better in your life. And because I think that we really have got so much information available to us to how to, you know, have a better life. And if you want to, you know, increase your capacity at work and at home and in all aspects of your life, you've always got to start with you, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I hope to be the same point growing myself, you know, writing this book. It was like huge risk, right? I'm writing this book and I've never written a book before. And it's been so much fun actually, because believe it or not, I've got emails from people in the States that I've never met before that have told me that their anxiety has gone away. Wow. And that they're, yeah, instantly feeling a lot better. There's a chapter just on anxiety and, you know, tools to help you outgrow anxiety, you know, cool. Because that's another thing that gets you back into that shrinkage, you know. We want expansiveness in our lives, right? Mm. Yeah, love is expansive, right? Even when I said that, your face just went, oh, I could just see it in your face. It was like, oh. And when you're in that state, you know, you are looking for more positive information in your day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just a way of being. And to do that, it's really within our own selves that we've got to kind of hone in, really hunker in on how am I showing up every day. So, you know, I would recommend, I'm sort of going on here, just stop me if you want me to, but
well, I want to ask you, Joanne, what is your website if people want to get in touch with you?
Okay, yeah, it's joannewiler.com. So it's joannewiler.com.
okay,
yeah.
Wonderful. And I'll be putting a link up to that on my website, spiritualshow.com, when I put the podcast up there. And so you mentioned the chapter about anxiety. So maybe we can give, what's one exercise that a listener could use today if they wanted to?
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what I was saying is like anxiety, it comes from a loss of control, right? And to actually step onto that electric pad I was talking mm-hmm. about, right? It's not electric after all. But you know, there's a sense of loss of control, right? It's a sense of moving into a space that you are vulnerable. So I think that the beginning of the day, like sort of think about your structures for your day. And I think that's the first thing to do. There's things that you can do, like exercise really helps your brain state. Giving yourself some time to meditate. So if you're brushing your teeth, I'm assuming every morning we all are, you know, link up meditation, like 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be a big hairy deal. It's just like 10 minutes of your day to just be reflective, like lie in bed for an extra 10 minutes and just breathe in and breathe out and actually really say to yourself, open my heart. Today I'll approach the day with an open heart and just breathe in and release out, you know, because there are going to be those things, those moments in the day that might disturb, but I can actually come back to that feeling that I've got when I take those 10 minutes. So that's one thing. Two, I would think do some kind of cardio because we, that will increase blood flow to your brain. It's going to help you show up better at school, at work, in your relationship with more capacity. Get good sleep, you know, I mean, just get enough sleep. You know, one of the hardest things is that, and it can be one of the causal factors in anxiety is not getting enough sleep. And so try to get 8 hours of sleep. No matter what age you are, we all need 8 hours of sleep. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the tapping, and I would, you know, suggest that, I mean, it's hard to describe this over the phone, but, you know, even as we're sitting here, if you actually just take a few moments, and you know that, that place on your, just above your kneecap where, you know, kids, when you give you, eat yourself a Charlie horse, you know, that kind of like, you know, that when you go into the doctor's office and you're getting your tune up, they might tap you on your knee to see the reflex you have there. Well, in that range, what you want to do is just hold your hands there and just alternate tapping on your knees. And when you do that, like as I'm sitting here, I can be tapping. You can carry a conversation on. You might be at work right now, sitting in your lunch hour. You could just do this tapping and just alternate tapping with your hands. And do that for about 3 minutes. And then just hold your hands there and you'll feel kind of like an energy down your legs. And that's a calming response through your skin, which is actually producing oxytocin, the attachment hormone I'd mentioned before. So that is, you know, one hands-on thing. Actually, that's a few hands-on things.
Well, and so what, sorry, I'm queuing. It's different. I'm used to having the, when it's a phone interview, I can make everything quiet and do all the computer stuff in the background. But
it's all good. Oh, I love it. You're a multitasker. Look at that female brain go.
Yeah. But so it releases oxytocin. Is there anything else? Because I'm wondering with the tapping and the EMDR, I mean, is it rewiring your neural pathways?
Yes. Yeah. So you're actually, so if you've got, when you have, confusing moments in your life, whether it's from childhood or in adult life, there's kind of like a little scarring in the neural pathways. And so, serotonin, which is the feel good chemical, doesn't easily flow through your brain. It sort of starts to trip up with the kind of like, instead of it being a river of, your pathways being like a river, there's like the scarring that happens. And, you know, the stories that you tell yourself around, living fearfully actually increase the scarring and the, and then, you know, the sort of natural flow of serotonin give, you know, sort of start to, you know, kind of come back. What we know is that through exercise, like the cardiovascular exercise, like 20 minutes of heart pumping cardio actually increases all of the wellness hormones and endorphins, serotonin, and, you know, those kinds of hormones that actually really help you increase the flow of the feel-good chemistry. So you'll start to naturally build more positive pathways. So, yeah, we can change our brain through time. And actually, too, the other thing, and it's mentioned in the book, good thing you mentioned, through meditation, you actually, what we know now is that you lengthen telomeres in your brain as well.
What's a telomere?
It's kind of like the little ends of a shoelace, you know, if I was to describe it. What happens is that with the longer the telomere that you've got, the more capacity you have to deal with stress. So in practicing meditation, you're actually lengthening the telomeres in your brain. So it helps you actually cope with stress. So for instance, the phone rings in the middle of the interview kind of thing, like it did a few minutes ago. Well, you know, you really handled that well, Marie, right? Like no
in
big
my
deal,
head, I was having a hard time focusing back though after. I was stressed out.
Well, my perception of you is you handled that really with ease, actually. And I was thinking, wow, she's got good telomeres, you know. And so without that, right, the shorter your telomeres, actually, the harder, the more stress you have. So the research shows that people who meditate have longer telomeres and people who don't meditate have shorter. And so what you want to do is lengthen them. And we know through meditation, you can actually lengthen your telomeres.
But now can there be telomeres for different things? Because like I know how to keep my cool, even though in my head I was like, okay, focus on the interview. Even though you're stressed out, focus on the interview. I almost asked you about it actually, because I was like only hearing about 70% of what you were saying, because my mind kept going back to like, that was embarrassing. You shouldn't have answered the phone. Why did you do that? You should have better boundaries about answering the phone when you're in the middle of it.
So there's that story that went on for you. Yeah. It's interesting. And it's so great that you just said that, right? And so you're being vulnerable right now and sort of being honest about those stories. And then I get to give you other information, which you can consider now. I actually thought to myself, wow, a true professional. She really handled that with ease. Not everybody would be able to handle that and come right back into focus. And so now as I give you new information about how I perceived you in that moment, you can kind of journal. You know, you might take away, this thought, wow, Joanne really thought, like, she was impressed with the way I handled that. And, you know, just journal about that. And maybe I am, you know, hard on myself, right? And could I be more positive and affirming of myself, right? It's kind of, so, you know, your kind of saboteur showed up just then to say, oh boy, what a screw up I am, right? And does that work for you? No, not so much, right? I mean, to a certain extent, it makes you better because, like, now you know, okay, so next time I can do that differently. I can have a choice in that. And so there's some learning in that. But it's also that I'm not a complete neophyte because I answered the phone. Mm-hmm. I actually thought that considering, you know, what just happened, you handled that really well.
Thanks.
It would be nice to have a phone in. Come on, you guys, phone in and ask some questions on the break.
Or a producer who could answer the phone for me. Maybe I won't play a song at the end. We'll see, because we have 6 minutes left. I was going to end with a song. But so can you have different lengths of telomeres for different subjects? Because some things, like, I can handle that quite cool. But then at that party the other night, I'm like looking like a basket case.
So it's actually a structure of your, like, you know, of your brain, right? So it's not like on sometimes and off other times. You're actually growing. So it's kind of like, if I was to think about my fingernails, right, like they grow, I can actually grow my fingernails. It's kind of like they're like that all the time. So I'm walking around with my fingernails a certain way. And that's the same with your telomeres. So it's kind of a, you practicing meditation are going to have longer telomeres. And in every situation, you're going to have these longer telomeres that are going to continue to grow. And so what you want to do is to practice meditation so that you can actually increase your capacity to cope with stress. And so Dan Siegel's got a book called Mindsight. It's really great at explaining this as well. And he uses a term called time in around meditation. And it's just sort of that place where you can actually take yourself to tune out the noise and actually really get back to what I was mentioning to you before, where you're not going to let yourself sabotage your life. And it's really paying attention to your strengths and really building from that. And also paying attention to your weaknesses. There are things that we need to grow into to create more capacity. And there honestly are, I mean, I've got learning curves and I hope to have learning curves throughout my life. Otherwise, I will, you know, not be growing. And, you know, I want to get better at love as well. And so I hope to never sort of say to myself that I'm done. I think by then I'm dead. You know, what's the point of living, right?
Yeah.
So at every age and stage. But the more we manage our stress, that's the bottom line. So the more we manage our stress, we are going to live longer. We're going to have better quality connection with each other. We are going to have a happier life, and not just happier, more meaningful life, right? And so that's kind of the goal, is like, what is going to be your legacy for your life? And taking a moment to sort of say to yourself, like, how is my legacy of living showing up right now? Right. And in this moment. And so let's take away the noise and just actually really be present for what's important about this moment. So whether it's a positive or negative, whether it's a happy feeling or a sad feeling, there's always some learning in it. And so there's, you know, the sense of capacity that comes from, like, I want to discover all of the feelings, like angry feelings too. There's a chapter in Breakup Breakthrough and Learning to Love Again that's about anger, and that it's not a bad thing. Anger's a really good way to learn if you kind of go to that place underneath anger. Yeah. Like, what is important about why I'm angry right now? What am I feeling and what do I need? Those two kind of questions.
Thank you so much. We're out of time, and coming up in just a moment is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Riffick. He's right there ready to yell out Namaste any second.
So can I just say, yeah, so you can pick up my book, Break Up, Breakthrough, and Learning to Love Again, if you go online to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or visit 32 Books in Edgemont Village, or vitamin store in Dunderave, or just take a look on my website, joannweiler.com, JoanneWeiler.com, and you can order the book through my website as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Joanne, for being on the show. It was such a pleasure having you.
Welcome.
And next week, it's fun to drive next week, right?
Yeah.
Aw, he doesn't sound very enthusiastic. Okay, well, coming up in just a moment is DJ Chris Horrific with Parts Unknown. So call in next week for the funding drive, and I'm going to close the show with some Surya Devi, who's going to be here live next week. So thank you so much to Joanne Weiler. Again, that's joanneweiler.com, and I just want to send lots of love to you. Be well. Love you so much. Namaste.
Sukhino bhavantu loka samasta sukhino bhavantu loka samasta sukhino bhavantu.
For a taste of the classics with a twist, join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
Hey there, listeners. It's almost that time of the year again where we ask you to help power the station you love. CITR's Fun Drive is kicking off on February 27th and ending with a finale party at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 7th. Last year, we exceeded our goal of $35,000 and used that money to purchase new soundboards for all three studios. This year, CITR needs your help in raising another $35,000 so that we can move into our brand new radio station this fall. You can donate by calling into your favorite show or go online to www.citr.ca. Again, Fun Drive is February 27th to March 7th, so be sure to donate and support campus and community radio.
Do you care? Abroad looks great on your resume and opens doors for exciting career paths. Don't miss the Study and Go Abroad Fair on Wednesday, February 26th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Vancouver Convention Center, East Ballroom. Admission is free. Come early at 2 p.m. to listen to our guest seminar on how to access over $100 million worth of scholarships for your studies. Check the website on studyandgoabroad.com.
An independent radio station at odds against major broadcasting corporations.
I want CITR.
Dead.
I want CITR.
His family. Dead.
I want a radio station.
Burnt to the ground. I want to go to
Vancouver, B.C.
I want to piss out his ashes.
Was given an opportunity they thought they would never get.
It's UBC. It says here that they want to give us a new radio station.
But they were up against one major problem.
How are we going to pay to move all our stuff into the new radio station?
CITR Radio presents the 2014 Fun Drive, a heartwarming story of compassion and generosity in which listeners like you donate to help support the station you love.
I just donated and it felt awesome.
For more information, go to www.citr.ca.
And that does it for the public service announcements, at least for now. You are listening to 101.9 CITR. Hey, how's it going? It's the Parts Unknown Show. Tonight, playing at the Fortune Sound Club is That Band. This is an old song from Calm Trues. It was a EP that this song was on, Sundriped, from their lovely little EP called Cyanide Sisters. Calm Trues is playing the Fortune Sound Club tonight with a band called Phantoms. Nice. You know, a band like Calm Trues wouldn't be around. They would sound completely different. They'd still be the same people. But if they were not influenced by a certain band that came to prominence in the 70s, there would be no Calm Trues. I don't think so. And that band is coming to the QE Theater. And I don't know if Kraftwerk has ever come to Vancouver before. I'm sure they have. But they are a very sporadic touring kind of band. Been around since the 60s. Whole bunch of different members in it. I think the main member is Florian Schneider. I could be wrong. Do you know what I'm going to just tell you to do? Listen to this song, The Mottl, from their Man Machine album that was released, I believe, in 1977. There's so many people that know Kraftwerk more than I. I just push the buttons and tell you to go see them. Oh, July 3rd. I'm so sorry. July 3rd at the QE Theater. Kraftwerk will be playing. Tickets, pretty reasonable, I think. Starts at about $45, ends at the $85 range. Save your pennies. Go see Kraftwerk July 3rd.
There was a time when beaver lodges like this one and the busy beavers that build them had almost disappeared from Canada because of overtrapping. But the beaver, who will always be associated with Canada's early days, has been reintroduced into many areas, and it's made a successful comeback. The beaver builds dams because he has to store
CITR
in water deep enough not to freeze. With all the wood cutting that the beaver has to do, it's fortunate that his incisor teeth never stop growing.